afternoon, listeners. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. And this is Zach, and I've got Steve here with me. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great.
We are in the middle of recording a couple of shows. You guys hear it to hear live and on podcast, but we're recording a couple of shows today. We interviewed two Charleses today. You're going to hear the second Charles probably sometime, or you can pick him up on the podcast. Charles Herrick was a great guest that we're excited to have on the show after today's guest, who is one of our most favorite people, one of my most favorite people anyway, so we're going to be excited to talk to him.
Well, this Charles is a almost 30-year friend.
Yeah.
And you're going to love hearing his story because he's the only Charles I know. In fact, he's the only person I know who started his career in business out of college selling cars. And he just retired last year as a chairman CEO of a Fortune 500 company. And he doesn't know that he knows how to teach anybody how to do this.
Yeah.
But we know that he's got it inside him, and you know he's going to be telling us about it today.
Yeah, and I'm excited. We're going to invite him on in just a minute. But we got to spend, or at least I got to spend with Steve, some great time with Charles and Deborah Oglesby down there in Atlanta, Georgia, and I still think about it to this day. It was some wonderful times.
Well, his greatest accomplishment in life is he convinced Deborah Oglesby, his beloved wife, who is also the chairman of Denny's Corporation, to tie the knot with him, and you know they're living happily ever after on a beautiful golf course in Atlanta.
That's right.
And we had to talk him off the golf course, you know, this afternoon to be able to you.
Well, I'm going to turn him on right now. I want everybody to meet Mr. Charles Oglesby. Steve, you introduce him. Hello, Charles.
Hey guys, Zach, Steve, how are y'all doing today?
We're doing wonderful. We're doing wonderful.
We get to use our y'alls today.
Yeah,
Steve.
We get to use the y'alls.
That's excellent.
That's the normal vernacular here, is y'all.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Steve was from Galveston, Texas, in Oklahoma. I was born in Oklahoma, so we're easily
swayed.
We're
into the y'alls. We're wondering though, how were you handling the y'alls when you were living and working out in New York City, Charles?
Well, it wasn't me handling y'all. It was everyone else.
That's right. You're the CEO. I forgot about it. They had to deal with your y'all. That reminds me of that Pace Picante sauce commercial of the Cowboys that are saying, you know, this stuff is from New York in New York City.
Yeah. I still say y'all. People catch me all the time. I say y'all, and instead of saying literally, I say literally. So people think I say y'all, and they're like, are you from the South? And then I say literally, and they're like, are you part British? Like, we all have this intertwined language these days. Man, introduce Charles to our guest.
Well, I've known Charles for almost 30 years, and as I mentioned when I first met him, he was a young, up-and-coming, struggling young artist, leader, and manager of a auto dealership in Memphis, Tennessee. And have kind of, worked together and followed each other and, had the opportunity to hear from Charles and work with Charles in a number of different jobs as he grew up in his career. And you'll find out when we get him talking here in a second that, he's a phenomenal leader. He's a culture-based leader. Anytime I'm able to persuade him to get off the golf course and go talk to a group of young up-and-coming leaders about the basics of his philosophy and what he's done and how he's put people first in every career and every job that he's ever had and turned it into phenomenal success, even to the stock market can measure by the performance of the price per share on the companies that he's created and built and led. This is a phenomenal guy. So, Charles, tell our listeners whatever in your humble sort of way. We have to poke him really hard to get him to really talk about who he really is and what he's done, because he's not only a nice guy, but he's a humble guy.
Yeah.
Give our listeners some background, and remember, you're talking to folks that are learning from your experience and will know that you're not bragging about anything.
Well, I appreciate all those comments, Steve. It certainly
and if you mess up, we know Deborah will correct you.
Yeah, Yeah, she isn't listening yet, so I'm not playing.
So you can relax now.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you for those comments. I'm not sure that I deserve all of that, but it sure makes me feel good. And I would say that for my life, the beginning of change began when I was 16. That's the first time that that I got married. 16, I had a pregnant girlfriend, no place to live, and 9 cents in my pocket. And I can remember that thinking in those days, it really wasn't an issue. It was just things that you needed to do or wanted to do, and creating some sort of thought process or vision for the immediate needs that we had at that time. I was very fortunate to find a job at a wire manufacturing plant working 4 to 12 that I could finish high school from 8 to 3. And then went to University of Georgia at college. In that interim time, my first wife and I were divorced. It just didn't work the way that that we would like for it to have. And so I enjoyed my my years at University of Georgia. And then when I graduated, started selling cars. And I did that while I was looking for a real job. And in doing that, I've discovered how much I love cars and I love people. And so that was the driver or the puller for me as I was getting engaged in what would, I didn't realize at the time, would be a 40-year career and something that just never seemed as much like work because I felt so passionate about it.
So, I mean, that's kind of the, you know, as you know, we're culture guys and we're always hearing the culture language behind everything, what you say, you know, that's kind of the first point that I just heard you speak to that so many young leaders can learn from, Charles, is, you know, you found home in your career when it's more about having fun than it is about working.
Well, what I can remember is a number of my fraternity brothers would call me when I was selling cars and ask me if that's what I went to college for, was just to sell cars. And I that is not the way that I viewed it. And then, of course, 10 years later, they were sending me resumes.
Be careful about how you disc your college buddies and how you condescend toward their careers, because someday they may be reviewing your resume.
Well, they're still friends of mine, so I remind them of that quite a few times whenever we're playing golf together.
Yeah, that's great, Charles. That's great. So, and then, so when I first met you, you were a general manager of a small Ford dealership, I think it was, in Memphis, Tennessee. How did you get, I mean, what made you stay, other than the fact you loved cars and you loved people, and, you know, the car business was all about both, you know, what made you stay and actually get to the place where you were, you know, the senior leader and actually managing, you know, an automobile dealership?
As I remember, not only was I passionate about the design of cars, I can't tell you anything how they operate, but I love the design, and then how much I enjoyed people, and it didn't matter to me. I didn't qualify anyone. I just wanted to work with and help anybody that came across my path, and it just so happened that I became good at selling cars, I believe, because I wanted to do what was right for them. And as it turned out well for all of us. As I was looking at the business and the industry, and I saw that there was an opportunity for professionalism as well as someone that wanted to achieve more in the business. It was a challenge at that time because this was still kind of a new industry, even though it was had certainly started after World War II. But I mean, there was plenty of opportunity at that time. And as I saw each path in front of me, or each opportunity to become finance and insurance manager, and then a sales manager, a general sales manager, and a general manager, I discovered that I had an ability to fix whatever I was working on. And in those early days, I believe I was in my very early 30s when we met, Steve, and you brought a program to me that I was able to articulate and take the ideas that I thought were mine, but you put them in a way that I could share with other people. And I've always wanted the best for everyone else. I mean, it was more about the employees and more about the customers than it was about me. And then as I discovered early on, the more that they were able to accomplish and the greater financial return and emotional return that they had, that the more success that I had.
Yeah.
And so as I discovered that, I was inspired by their successes.
Yeah.
And then these things just happened to come into my life, new opportunities, new challenges, things that I wanted at that time would be to own my own dealership, because in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't consolidators, there wasn't a public company. It was just about whatever you wanted to accomplish with your life, and that happened to be my personal goal, was to own my own dealership. And so as everyone started having success around me, they just pulled me right with it. I mean, it just really made things easier for you. I discovered, hey, wait a minute, this is what you like. You get the return on your emotional and financial investment. And then here, things started working well for me.
Mm. Yeah. Well, so we work with a lot of really smart people who do research and all the time. And we hear you say things like, you know, these things just happened to come into my life. And, you know, our researchers would, you know, tell you that it isn't just something that happened to come into your life, but you doing what you love and putting all that you had into it and put together with you always wanting the best for everyone else, not yourself, are what caused these things to just happen in your life. And then you say things like, everyone started having success around me and they pulled me along with them. I don't think I've ever read one success book by one successful leader that, you know, could share that philosophy.
Yeah.
Charles, but you pulled it off.
Yeah.
I mean, you pulled it off, and you pulled it off exceedingly well.
Well, it was, for me, I always felt like, or always had the thought, that everyone was outworking me and outsmarting me. So I needed to work more and to find smarter people around me that could keep us in a competitive situation. As we measured all of our, the metrics that we used to make sure that we were being market competitive, that we were gaining the market share we needed, we were getting the profit numbers that we needed, and as we gained those things, others got, again, the return for what they wanted as well. Our salespeople started making more money. Our managers started making more money. And then it wasn't about how much they made. It was about how big could we get the numbers on the check, because it was always their fair share.
Yeah.
The company always made more as long as they made more. And as everyone continued to get emotionally, the emotional returns, then the financial returns always came.
Amazing. We're gonna go into a break, Charles. But when we get back, I wanna engage you on kind of where you feel like that within you came from, and
okay.
that inner thing was like, if we build each other, we all get to this place. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and on podcast. We're going to a break. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
You're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. This is Zach and Steve Gander with our good friend Charles Oglesby. And Charles, we just finished off that last section before the commercials with you sharing about how bringing people up around you, you word it better than I do, but I want to know where did that come from within you? Where did that understanding, because again, Steve mentioned that there's a lot of success writers out there. There's a lot of consultant talk out there that is not speaking how you speak and is coming from this very self-centered place. Where did that come from with you?
Zach, I think from my perspective, I can remember always being compassionate and concerned about others. Later in my life, I was able to articulate it. That one of the major goals for me is to improve the quality of life of every life I touch. Mm-hmm. I didn't articulate it that way earlier in my life, but that I know that the return to me when others were able to navigate their way through their life, at whatever issue they were dealing with at the time, because we always, all of us, deal with very difficult issues, pleasing issues, yeah. Things that work for us. I mean, life is you know, mosaic. And each one of us, as we are painting a part of this life together, we all are painting this picture or this vision. So I think early in my life, it was just about the response that I got when someone achieved something that they wanted, when they did more than they ever believed that they could do, it just seemed to inspire me. The more I was inspired, the more I shared, and the more I shared, the greater the achievement was.
Yeah. Do you think you learned these values, Charles? Did you learn them growing up? Did you learn them from role models, or were they just so much a part of you, you don't know where they came from?
You know, Steve, I believe that is, I certainly had some great role models growing up. My coaches in the sports that I played, my family. I can remember as a child growing up, 11, 12, 13 years old, that every night at 9 o'clock the television was turned off and we were on our knees saying our prayers. And I believe that having that spiritual foundation gave me the strength that no matter what issue that I personally was dealing with, gave me the courage and the strength to overcome it. And then certainly as I was able could do that, I was able to share that with other people. And when you share your life together with whatever is going on, the challenges as well as the great things that go on, I think that you build something that becomes a vision that everyone shares, because you're opening your life up to each other. And the earlier in my life, the more that I did that, the more that I shared, and the more that was shared with me, then it seemed as if we were all in step together with a shared vision of whatever task it was that we wanted to accomplish.
Yeah.
So it's almost kind of like what you learned as a small child that stuck with you. You figured out a way how to deploy it into a culture inside of a business that grew and grew and grew and grew. And it was the "it's not about me" kind of a culture that seemed to be what worked for you.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I can remember was, as I thought about those things, that it just wasn't about the bottom line or it wasn't about achievement, but it was about personal development, not only mine, but everyone else that we were to get, everyone's personal development. That early on, it was about the courage to express that. Once I discovered that, wait a minute, it works, and it's okay to care about others, and it's okay to want other people to be successful, that we weren't competing for something. I didn't have to show or prove that I was better than anyone else. It was about achieving the things that were important to our life. So having the courage to do that, I think, was some of the early lessons that I learned to be a leader. It is having that kind of courage to want everyone to be successful.
Yeah.
Every time I talk to you, I just feel like I can shut up and listen for a long, long, long time. I feel like Charles Oglesby is a shaman.
from South Georgia.
You know, and he's the Sherpa that's helping us all get to the top of the mountain, you know? And Charles, I just want to, this is probably maybe more of a personal question for me, but I think what I find my biggest challenge is as a leader in the realms that I lead, whether that be family, business, or other endeavors, is the American dream within me, right? It's that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for me. It's the achievement, go out and get it. I mean, what within you, what was the greatest? I mean, you sound like a guy to me right now. It's like, did this guy ever deal with personal pride? Like, did he ever deal with the challenge of overcoming surrendering himself? Did he always just find the joy in life of seeing others excel around him? I don't even know if that's posing a question, but what were the things in your life that helped you overcome that?
Yeah, or
selfish,
Charles, did you
achievement driven?
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever find that? Was that ever a struggle for you, or did you just naturally just care about everybody else and focus on building them? Did you ever have to struggle with Charles's ego and Charles's pride and thinking Charles was cooler than he actually was?
Absolutely. I believe that every person struggles with whatever it is in our life's purpose it is to learn. I did have issues early on when there were some successes that my part of me didn't believe that I had earned it, but my ego wanted to say, look at me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the opportunity for us to learn the things that make us great or good leaders or keep us from learning these things. I guess that life will keep throwing things at you in different ways until you learn them.
Yeah.
So once I was able to realize, wait a minute, that my ego, this is not about me, and that my success is always about the level of achievement and the things that other people want, then again, once I discovered that and did keep my ego back, then it was easier for me to think in terms of, okay, what can I do to inspire or ignite this person or this organization? Because it really is more, as you get into organizations with numbers of people, the more people that you have, the greater the challenge it is to have a shared vision, because you have a culture that's going in many different directions at the same time. And until you can ignite that culture with a shared vision, you don't necessarily have the type of success that's measurable when other people invested in you, they want a measurable return, or they want success.
Yeah.
So I think that being able to create a culture that supersedes the individual and that everyone can believe in and see what their picture of how they fit within this culture, that's how you achieve it and are able to multiply it beyond a individual. Each individual is important to the success of the whole, but you must be able to get beyond just the individual as you get into larger and larger organizations.
Yeah. I wish I could tell you over the years how many CEOs and executives and leaders that we've talked to that, yeah, they got the vision and, yeah, they've got the values and they're beautiful and they're mom and apple pie and God and country and they're in gold frames and websites and, you know, wordsmith and polished, you know, to the highest level, but they don't work. And the people get stuck and egos get out of control and money and numbers and quarterly sales reports become more important than serving customers or taking care of employees. And as you know, Charles, this is a show about cultures of ethics, values, and employee engagement. And what we're hearing from you is what some might call simple homespun values that turned into phenomenal scalability, you know, in business terms. And the way that, you know, you've laid these out for us and for our listeners, so simple, so down to earth. Hey, it's almost like, wait a minute, you know, it's the golden rule. It's about thinking about these other guys and being able to, like what you just said, turn that vision, turn that, you know, vision or that culture, that process into a vision that ignites a culture, is kind of where it's all at. And what people seem to be doing and what leaders seem to be doing is the reverse. I mean, they think that the vision is going to ignite the culture and ignite everything. And what I hear you saying, it's almost like this stuff came out of your soul, and that was the spark that ignited everything, not just some fancy wordsmith mission statement.
Well, one of the things that I believe, Steve, about that is whenever you shortcut the creativity, the energy that it takes to fashion or create a culture, and you think that just inspiring words or pressure, anything other than being able to have everyone that's in the organization understand clearly, number one, what is expected of them and what the vision is, and then how what it does for them. And as leaders are able to touch different levels in the organization or as many employees as they possibly can, it is one of those things that each employee then understands how to act. For me, one of the guiding, my North Stars has always been, I don't go against the laws of God or man, and I want to do everything with character and integrity. For me, it was making sure that everyone's belief system of what character and integrity is would be the same thing.
Yeah.
And then as they understand those principles, to me, everything else would fall easily into place. That they held themselves accountable, they knew what was necessary to do to create the results. Because your culture is one thing, but a great culture without results really doesn't work either.
Yeah, it doesn't.
They must work together. The results oftentimes would be the first thing that people look at. Okay, how much money did we make? How much market share did we have? How are these things, what are our margins? And they would look at that first before they would peel back that and say, well, okay, how did we get to those numbers? From my view, combining those things together, expecting the end result, but having a culture that is sustainable and that can be passed on from employee to an employee because it's just infectious.
Yeah. That's what we're going to go. We need to go into a break, Charles. But that's what I want to talk about when we come back, is how do we create that infectious culture? And how, you know, essentially, how do you multiply Charles Oglesby's? We're going to go to a break. You're listening
Deborah
to...
Deborah would not want to do that.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. We're going to go to a break. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Play 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
We're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We are talking to our personal shaman and Sherpa, Charles Oglesby. And we're just
the shaman Sherpa,
the shaman Sherpa
from South Georgia.
From South Georgia.
I am looking around the room to find that shaman.
You kind of wish you'd met him.
Yeah, the culture shaman.
So, hey, Charles. So, you know, you've shared with us so much about your values and ethics, and you know how you deployed them, you know, into you know, a phenomenal, you know, business success, and just did it without even. It was almost like you didn't have a goal for a phenomenal business success. You had goals to serve and help and support your people and make them successful. And as you said, they took them along with you. Tell us about, you know, I know you've had some real tough obstacles in your life to overcome and some painful, you know, experiences that almost took you down that you had to really test your principles and your values to get through. You know, what was the toughest obstacle you ever had to overcome? And, you know, how did you apply what you've learned in order to get through it? And what did you learn from it?
The most difficult and one of the darkest moments of my life was when I lost my college sweetheart and my wife of 25 years. That was my darkest moment. When she first... we discovered that she had breast cancer. We found the best doctors. We went through all the right protocols. A mastectomy, and we thought we had the cancer was gone. And when it came back with a vengeance. And at that time, I was one of the first consolidators working with. Wall Street money, so to speak, that wanted to create an IPO and build a public company around auto dealerships. And I put my career on hold at that time because my family is and was the most important thing to me. We lost that battle, and again, I said it was my darkest moment. Because not only did I lose my partner, my friend, and my wife and the mother of my children, but I didn't have a job. I didn't have a clear vision of a path because it wasn't about me anymore. I just didn't quite know how to pick myself up. I'd never been through a grieving experience like that. And during that time, it was during the winter. My friends were all working. My sons were grieving as they needed to, and I found myself alone. And it really was a time that I was asking myself, what do I do with the rest of my life, and how do I do it? So it was a great test. I was fortunate that I had a number of friends in the industry, and my reputation was to a point that I was able to really buy a small dealership at that time as I was healing and moving forward with my life. Well, I didn't realize, and it didn't feel like I was moving forward during that grieving process. But then as I discovered that was really too small for me, and I had an opportunity again to get back into a consolidator role with a group of individuals in California that wanted to do the same thing, that wanted to create a consolidated group of dealerships, and there were public companies at that time. So I was able to get back into something that was unique and that I enjoyed and be a part of what the new movement at that time, which was consolidating auto dealerships.
Was there any clear lesson or clear, I mean, if you know, obviously there's people listening who are going through dark moments in their life right now who, you know, have lost, you know, a life partner, who have lost a loved one like you have. Is there anything, you know, anything clear that advice that you could give them that helped you get through, the loss of Peggy and the grieving process and kind of, you know, your life back on track and back in the game, so to speak, Charles?
The thing that comes to my mind as you asked that question, Steve, was faith and belief in who I was. It was finding a new person, because for 25 years I had a partner, and so it all boiled back for me to have enough faith and belief in what I had always wanted. What I enjoyed the most was, again, the opportunity to impact the lives of other people.
Yeah.
And as that was done, again, things that I wanted were served as well. So for me, that being able to draw upon the faith and belief that there are still things to be done with life, just in a different way.
Yeah. And then it sounds like when you reconnected with pouring your life into other people and their success, that spark kind of grew, and now it's like a philosophy of living.
That was actually gave me my life back, because at that point I wasn't sure exactly what my life was about. But as I did that, then it really gave me my life back.
Charles, how is that? I mean, we're working with a company right now and on the phone with some executives in this company the other day, and they believe in their leader, and their leader is a great man, much like you, very inspiring, very giving, very looking for everyone to be built up. And one of the things they mentioned to me was, if we could get a whole bunch of him on our top level leadership team, the problem is he's not able to be around very much, and if we could multiply who he is and how he is on our team, it would really help us to implement new culture and bring new culture change to our department, to our company. How do you do that? How do you multiply what you're talking about, what you're believing, what you're living into the lives of other people where they're living it the same way?
You know, Zach, I learned early as I moved into different leadership roles that I couldn't do it myself, and that I needed to multiply myself. And what I discovered was that the more people, first, they needed to believe in the vision. They needed to understand how they were, what their position or leadership was in the organization. But I think the most important thing for me was how I multiplied myself, was the more mistakes people made and they realized that it was safe to make mistakes, it actually created creativity, and it accelerated their leadership ability. And we had the same viewpoint. We don't go against the laws of God or man, and we do everything with character and integrity. Who can say that this exact business plan shouldn't be modified as people grow and as they use creativity and the feeling of safety to make mistakes? You're going to outgrow the business plan that you thought was the effective business plan, but it will grow beyond, because you have everyone that is focused on the growth, personal growth as well, but they were able to multiply themselves. None of us are alike.
Right.
So you can't have one person and then clone them. It just doesn't happen that way. I think great companies are able to multiply the principles of what that company stands for. And then as they multiply that, then they're multiplying their leader.
Yeah, that's very good.
Charles, I still remember when you told me that, when you were CEO and chairman of Asbury, that you decided to retire. And, you know, my thought was, what's happened to this guy? I mean, you're at the top of your game. You're touching, literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives, considering all of your employees, your family members, and their family members, and your shareholders, and your customers. I mean, maybe millions, but, probably millions of lives in a very positive way. And when we get back from the break, I want you to tell us about, your answer to me was, well, Steve, if I figured out that if I kept doing it, it was just going to be about the money. We want you to tell us some more about what you meant by that.
Yep. Right after the break, you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
So we're back on Biz Culture Matters with Charles Oglesby, and before the break, the question was, when you're at the top of your career like you were, Charles, and all of a sudden from out of nowhere you decide it's time to retire, and everybody's saying,
what's wrong with this guy? There's so much more to do, so much further to go. And your response to me was, if I kept doing it, I realized it was just going to be about the money and not about the people. What in the world does that mean?
Well, Steve, I would first say that I could not have even considered that had not the succession of leadership been in place with great people that I had personally recruited and wanted to be in those roles, but I could not have considered it. But I think that for me, this was just for me, that had I, and I said that to you because once I realized that that was the driving force for me, it would have just been about the money, then I couldn't do whatever I need to do or want to do with the rest of my life, with the, whatever runway I have left. And at that point, I knew that it was just time, and it was time for somebody else to take over the organization. And it was just time. Had I stayed, it would have just been about the money. And there are many things, I don't know what they are yet, but there are other things that I want to be and will be a part of that will give me the kind of fulfillment that I'm personally looking for.
Yeah, what a great answer. What an awesome answer. So, Charles, if in a short response, because we're in our last segment here, we're starting to run close on time, how does a small town Georgia boy who had, I think you said, 9 cents in your pocket, and a baby and a new wife and all kinds of struggles in front of you, get from there to where you felt you got to at the moment when you decided, well, it's time to move on into the next chapter of my life because it'll just be about the money if I hang in to doing what I'm doing right now?
You know, see, that's a great question, and it's a bit of a challenging question because, you know, at 16 years old, you don't think in terms of being the CEO or chairman of a Fortune 500 company. Or you really don't have, I didn't have the vision of even finishing or going to college at that point in time. But what I have noticed is that as we are on our path of life and we are looking forward and with high self-esteem, wanting to be achieve the highest potential that we can, that things just come into your life. And then as you make those decisions, you are creating and navigating through your life at that time. To me, it just happened to sell cars. I just happened to be in the car industry. But I think what I was living my life, and I was experiencing and growing as a person, and I wanted everyone around me to do that. We just happened to be in the car business. We could have sold tin cans, or we could have been in the manufacturing business, or we could have been in any kind of business. But I believe it's development of our spirit, the development of our life, and the development of people around us that pull us to achieve or become leaders at different levels. So, I mean, I didn't know that the automobile business was going to do what I want, but I knew that I wanted to grow as a person and that I was not going to be just a 16-year-old kid that quit and lost his life because this event happened in my life.
Yeah.
So it was being, no matter what event came into my life, there's the opportunity to grow from it, and there's the opportunity to experience more, even from a challenge. A great person always has said, in every adversity, there's a seed of greater benefit.
Yeah.
But we've got to look for it.
Yeah.
And then as we find it, we just keep moving forward.
Yeah. So, Charles, as we're getting close to wrapping here in a few minutes, put your coaching hat on for a second. And, given what you've seen, all the way from, hometown Georgia to Wall Street and, small business, middle-sized business, big business, global business, huge business, what
what advice would you have to young up-and-coming leaders about, you know, the culture pitfalls that, you know, folks can run into? Put your coaching hat on, and what advice would you have to our listeners that, that could help them navigate the future like you have?
Culture matters, and that you can influence culture. Finding yourself sometimes in a very challenging or difficult culture is probably the greatest growth challenge that you would have, or I would think an individual would have. I was fortunate that I was able to make decisions when I found myself in a culture that wasn't in alignment with my personal value system, that I made a decision to change and put myself at risk to find either a culture that I could impact or make a difference, or that was in alignment with my personal and spiritual needs. I can't imagine anyone going through life with, and being out of alignment with what their personal and spiritual needs would be, because I would always think about employees sitting on the edge of the bed waiting for the sun to come up so they could go to work.
Wow.
Rather than having a pit in their stomach and couldn't, and just would be sick about going to work. And I think that was one of the things for me as well, is that being able to think about creating an environment like that, that people that wanted to be a part of that always became a part of that. And if other people thought we were crazy and that we were eating some strange food or something.
It was the Kool-Aid.
It's the shaman cult.
Yeah, I mean, they go work somewhere else. I wanted them to go work for the competition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I answered your question.
It was a phenomenal question.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, phenomenal answer to a question that, you know, how's that, business leaders, be thinking about every day your employees sitting on the edge of their bed, hardly, you know, can hardly wait to get to work, excited about their day, instead of a pit in the stomach and wondering, how am I going to get through this? How's that for employee engagement 101?
There you go. I love it. This, Charles, you're one of my favorites. I say that every time we get a chance to talk, and we need to do it more. We need to have him back on the show.
Yeah, we're going to have you back on the show. There's two questions that we didn't even get to.
We didn't even get to ask.
Didn't get to ask yet.
I feel thoroughly shamaned, and we appreciate your wisdom and your time and your sharing and your transparency and everything. Thank you so much.
Well, this has been a blast for me, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Our pleasure.
All right, guys, you've heard it here. You can re-listen to this airing on excellentcultures.com/podcast, or just look for Biz Culture Matters on iTunes, and bring your questions to us. Ask the experts at excellentcultures.com. Tune in next time. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.